Who's he gonna wear it if it's not gay?
Assemblage. Stockpile killer. I like that one. Crowd, group, horde, lot, lump, majority, mob. Those are some words that are supposedly synonymous with mass, but they don't seem to work in this situation. Welcome, everyone, to the Four Corners Crime Cast. My name is Jake.
My name is Rory.
And I'm your host, Katie. And today we're going to be giving you a little mini episode on Robert Benjamin Smith out of Mesa, Arizona.
Now, what kind of killer was...
A stockpile killer.
He was a wannabe mass killer.
Now, why would you call him a wannabe?
Because his original plan was to kill at least 40 people, and he was really disappointed that he only got 5.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call 5 a mass.
Yeah, single digits is...
Seems a little low for a mass killer, but I mean, he did commit mass murder, I guess.
Makes me question his dedication.
He didn't have much dedication. Well, I guess he went through with it, so he did have a little dedication.
That would be dedication. So, Smith was born in 1948, and he was the child of an Air Force Reserves major, so he moved around and had trouble settling into his new life every time he found himself in a new city. Neighbors, friends, and family described him as shy and awkward and so uncoordinated that he could not ride a bike or tie his own shoes.
Did he have, like, an inner ear problem, or was he just couldn't kick his legs at the same time?
He was a real Jared Loughner.
Real Jared Loughner.
I think he was just a little stupid.
Exactly, that's what I was getting at.
He's just a little uncoordinated, huh?
Just a little. So uncoordinated that he couldn't tie his shoes, which I wouldn't say is a little. I'd call that a lot. So he lacked many, many friends. He really didn't have anyone in his life, so he spent most of his time engrossed in books about his idols, which included Julius Caesar, Napoleon, and his major one, John F. Kennedy.
John F. Kennedy was his idol?
Yeah.
Seems a little opposite of what he was going for there with Napoleon and whatnot.
Yeah, he changes later on, though. So when he's 13, his huge major turning point is when Kennedy gets assassinated.
Like the death of his hero, or just because he was just a turning point?
Just it was the death of the major person in his life that he looked up to and wanted to be.
Okay.
His fascination turned from heroes to villains, including Lee Harvey Oswald, John Wilkes Booth, and Hitler.
So he went from John F. Kennedy being his hero, who got assassinated, and then to John Wilkes Booth, who assassinated a president. Complete 360.
No, 360 would bring him back.
Shit, you're right. It's a 180. God damn it.
He took a 180 and then came back to liking the people that killed the presidents instead of being fans of the president.
Lee Harvey Oswald is the one that assassinated Kennedy.
Yeah, he assassinated Kennedy, so he's all about assassins.
Oh, did you say that one too?
Yeah. So in 1965, Smith and his family relocate to Arizona. Because he's so lonely, shy, and awkward, Smith is ignored, mostly through his school years. He dreams of fame, but he had no way to achieve it. That was until Richard Speck and Charles Whitman committed mass shootings.
Mob shootings?
No.
Stockpile shootings.
Richard Speck, he's the dude that has titties in prison now.
Mm-hmm.
Like tattooed on his back?
He was a spree killer, technically.
He was a spree killer. He went and killed 8 nurses or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Charles Whitman, he shot up a... College, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was the guy that climbed the clock tower?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pretty sad stuff. Terrible people to idolize.
Yeah. Their immediate fame caught Smith's eye. He wanted everyone to know his name for his crimes and to be front page news. And he wanted somebody to notice him. During this time, after he learned what he could about Speck and Whitman, he hatched a plan. He would commit a mass shooting. He just had to figure out where to do it.
So did he start out with a plan of a mass shooting, or was it...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how he figured he could get his name out there, because this was during the time when we started really getting into the true crime stuff.
Like crime started being covered on the nightly news.
Mm-hmm,
and stuff.
Yeah, they would get way into detail on the news and in the newspapers and talk about the killers and their lives, etc. So he figured that if they could do it, he could do it.
You gotta love his go-getterness.
Yeah, he's a bit of a go-getter. So he comes up with a plan. Now, how old is he at this time?
He's 18.
He's 18. He comes up with a plan. It's obviously gonna be a bad plan, but let's hear about it, Key.
So he eventually settles on the Rosemar College of Beauty in Mesa. On November 12th, he awakes early and grabs a paper bag that contained his .22 caliber pistol, nylon rope, tape, plastic sandwich bags, and a hunting knife. And this is a kicker. His original plan is to suffocate his victims with the sandwich bags.
Now, when you say sandwich bags, what do you...
Like literal sandwich bags. Like the
like
kind
gallon
that
gallon storage bags.
No, like sandwich bags that you would put a sandwich into.
Is he going to stuff them up their noses and down their throats?
No, he wanted to put them over their heads. He figured out quickly that you can't fit a sandwich bag over your head. I think he probably tried it on himself, and I like to picture him trying to get a sandwich bag over the top of his head.
Or maybe he just tried to put his hand in it, and he was like, "Ah, oh, shit, this isn't gonna work."
But he took him with him anyway, so he still tried to get him with the sandwich bags when he got there.
He didn't try, but he had him just in case. So he ditches that idea, and after walking a mile and a half to the college, he enters and is ignored by the women there. He fires a warning shot into the air and then tells the women to lay in a circle with their heads in the center like the spoke of a wheel. Mary Olson begins to pray, and when Smith asks what she's doing, another woman replies, "She's praying, if you don't mind." Smith says, "I do," and fires a shot into Olson.
Oh, like in her face or...
Into
like
the back of her head.
Oh, dang.
That's a cheating way to play Duck Duck Goose.
So even though the gun was bought by his parents for his target practice, he's a terrible shot, and it takes 3 bullets to kill her.
So the old third time's a charm.
Well, 3 strikes, you're out. No, that's not an appropriate thing.
Like, that's fine. So he then shoots Deborah, who was 3 years old, in the head twice, but she does not die. He stabs her. Her mother, Joyce Sellers, despite a bullet in her brain, jumps on top of her 3-month-old child and saves her life. Bonita Sue Harris is also shot, but plays dead and survives. Glinda Carter and Carol Farmer also are shot and die.
So that's 5 out of 7 people died in this situation.
Yes.
Damn. Do we know what he was shooting them with?
.22 caliber pistol.
That's a pretty small gun. I wonder if that's why it took 3 bullets to kill some of them.
I was just thinking that same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're shot in the head with a .22, it dings around in there and fucks shit up pretty quick. I think he was just a really bad shot.
Yeah, I could see that, I guess.
Because Bonita is still alive and playing dead, she says that she hears Smith laughing as he fires the shots over and over into all the other women.
So he's just gone completely mental. He's just enjoying himself.
Mm-hmm. And then when he's finished, he casually walks out the door and is stopped by police, who ask what he did. He replies, "I shot some people. They're back there. The gun is in that sack." When he's later asked about his crimes, he explains that he's disappointed with the death count because the salon is normally full of women on Saturday mornings. He also claims that if his mother and sister were in the room, he would have shot them too.
Did he take enough ammo with him to actually be, like, to take out as many people as he wanted, or is he just full of shit and trying to talk himself up?
He had extra ammo in the paper sack that he took with the sandwich baggies, which would have been his backup if he ran out of ammo.
I just can't even understand this human. So he comes up with a plan to get famous by shooting a large group of people. He bumble butts it and ends up killing 5 people, mm-hmm. wounding 2 more.
Yes. He wanted his tally to be at least 40, but the salon was not full.
So he felt cheated by not being able to get the death count that he was looking for?
Basically, he wanted to make a name for himself, and he didn't think he'd be able to do that with only 5 victims. On October 24th, 1967, after a 32-day trial, Smith was found guilty on 5 counts of first-degree murder after a less-than-2-hour jury deliberation. He was sentenced to death, but 4 years later, he was granted a new trial because of some of the witness testimony was deemed unreliable. Unfortunately, capital punishment was not a sentence in 1967, and Smith pled guilty, so he didn't get the death penalty, and he's given 4 life sentences, and he's still in an Arizona prison today. He's 71.
Rotten like the piece of shit that he is.
71 years old, spent his entire adult life in prison. Sounds expensive.
For us.
I think the funny part of this is that I've never heard of this guy before. He just randomly popped up, and so he failed in his mission to make a name for himself.
This is also true. I mean, if you're going to do that, you know, and then want to make a name for yourself, the best thing that can happen is that people forget about you.
So what it really all comes down to, just like in every single episode, fuck this guy.
Yeah, fuck this guy. He pretty much is a failure.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
he killed 5 people, but he still just seems like a failure in every aspect of his life. Especially when it comes to, like, tying shoes or riding a bike.
Anything a normal 5-year-old child can do.
Yeah.
Rubbing his belly and patting his head at the same time.
He probably can't do jumping jacks.
Yeah, if you're not coordinated.
Those are pretty hard if you don't have any coordination. How long do you think he tried to get the sandwich bags over his head? Let's take a guess.
Well, he's not that coordinated, so I'm thinking maybe, you know, 7-8 minutes.
He couldn't even get it unzipped
to
get it
over his head. I was just about to say, 4 minutes to figure out the zipper and 30 minutes to
get his fingernails between the plastic to pull it open.
Yep. It's all about coordination, baby. You gotta have the coordination.
His mom opening up the drawer. Where the hell are my sandwich bags? Bobby, where are my sandwich bags?
Okay, so I kind of wanted to touch on the aspect of the fact that we give so much fame to these people, and that even in today's climate, you still see a lot of very young children taking these crimes and trying to recreate them, like Columbine.
I mean, there's always going to be, like, a weird side of society that has a hero worship for the bad guy. I mean, often when I watch movies, I'm rooting for the bad guy. Like,
yeah, none of those people listen to our podcast, for sure.
True crime is definitely picked up, and it's very interesting. I do it more as a psychology aspect and, like, what makes people do these things, and not so much the people that are, like, just weirdly obsessed with Jeffrey Dahmer because they think he's super cute.
Yeah. I can get that. I mean, we are kind of, like, riding on the coattails of that, though, the people's obsession with true crime. I mean, that's the whole idea, is to, like, have a podcast where you can talk to like-minded people about something that you're interested in. And it just happens that we all kind of do have an obsession with true crime, whether it's, you know, relating to the psychological aspect or just liking to hear about brutal shit that jackasses do. I mean...
Yeah, I think it should be definitely taken down in the news media, though, because, I mean, as soon as this shit happens, people are... You have the name, you have the backstory of these people, and I don't think that broadcasting that out to every single person ever... I mean, if you go looking for it, it's a totally different story, but, I mean, they just blast these people, and that's all they talk about. They never talk about victims. Like, Anderson Cooper won't mention... If someone, like, commits a mass shooting, Anderson Cooper refuses to use the killer's name. He only talks about victims. I think we could maybe turn that way a little bit more in the media for the really young people out there that are kind of getting ideas.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at this kid, there are hundreds more kids like him that, you know, may not be the most coordinated, can't play sports, just all around those children. Kind of, yeah, like all around kind of like just loner kids that, you know, find something and grab onto it. That's where you get these, like, 9-year-olds in 4chan saying the N-word and stuff and, you know, posting all sorts of racist and dumb shit because they don't really understand humanity yet. Yeah, but 4chan is just the depraved cesspool of disturbing white nationalist ideology where kids can learn to hate no problem. And so they grow up and they become people like this, where they were an uncoordinated child. Now they're an uncoordinated adult, but they can be famous. They can be, you know, held in regard by certain groups of people.
I think media has a big effect on these kind of things and a big effect on the mentality of people that are, I mean, psychopathy is something that is born and not created. If you have that mentality already and you can get on the internet and everyone tells you it's fine to think like that and it's fine what you do because they think you're joking and you're really not, I mean, it's kind of ingrained into you that people can do shit like this and get away with it and you'll be famous forever and people are going to mention that they saw you post on 4chan or whatever and they know that you were going to do it but they didn't stop you, blah blah blah. It's just a whole fucking circle jerk of people doing shitty things because we're telling them it's okay now.
I don't know if we're telling them it's okay, but we definitely will, you know, we definitely show them that side of it by, you know, aggrandizing these people.
Yeah, because when something graphic happens, they don't show it on the news. How many of us immediately try to find it on Google?
That literally happened with a New Zealand shooter. Like, we watched that live. That was, like, we heard about it, and we went and found the video. And I don't think it was live. We were probably on like a 30-minute delay or something. But we saw that on the big screen, saw him walking through that temple. So, I mean, it's one of those things where we sought that out. We looked for it because we knew it was out there. Is that also part of this? Like, or is this just a fascination with how people can be like that? And in having a fascination, we have become above it, I guess? I don't know.
I think we're definitely desensitized to the graphic things because, I mean, at least us, we were all raised in this climate that you can get on the internet and see some really, really terrible stuff. You have LiveLeak, you have Best Gore, you have all of these websites you can go to and see really disgusting things, so we're just used to it now.
Yeah, kicking it old school with Rotten.com from the dial-up yeah. days or all
yeah,
that
fun so
stuff.
You can get on. I mean, I think it's, in our case, more of a morbid curiosity. I know for me, at least, it's how I would just want to know why, what makes you think that you can do this and why you think that, you know, it's okay and what gives you that drive. I don't think it's me being like, oh, well, that's cool because that person killed another person. I just don't understand violent crime and how you can commit violent crime. So I want to get into the brain of these people and figure out what made them be able to do it.
I just like the part where they rot.
My favorite part is I actually just like the the murdery parts because it's so graphic and shocking. It almost like puts you closer to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually like understand a little more as to how horrible this actually is. And it puts it into a huge perspective for you. So, I mean, the crime itself is probably the most important part to me because I like to be able to justify how terrible of a person I am. Well, at least I'm not.
Okay, Dexter.
Okay, so we're going to go back a little bit on that one.
I think it's a mortality thing, too. I mean, it's interesting to me to know that you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time and everything's, that's it. I mean, you're part of something like this.
Yeah, I can get that, too. I mean, it could just be gone in the blink of an eye. Like, these people were just going in to get their beauty on and whatnot.
All right, so that was everything that we have on Robert Benjamin Smith.
BJ Smith, right? Is that what we're calling him?
Yeah, I like BJ. I think it's funny.
All right, so old BJ Smith, he is rotting in his prison cell for the rest of the future. Stay there forever.
I don't know if I mentioned, but he was denied parole last year in 2018, so.
Good.
We'll deny him some more parole later.
I mean, what would he even do in society? The last time he saw outside of a jail cell was like 68. So,
yeah.
I mean, what is he going to do for us? He's going to come out and be ooh-na-na-na over cell phones and not understand anything about
it. He's going to be like that one guy that was, what, 77 that they just released and like 2 days after they let him out of prison because he was too old. He fucking murdered someone else. He stabbed a woman.
Oh, yeah, they're like, he's too old to kill again.
You're never too old to kill again.
You're never too old. So I guess that's BJ Smith. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Four Corners Crime Cast.
Yeah, thanks for listening to our little short episode. It sure was fun.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Adios.
And Bingo, where's his name?
Oh, B-I-N-G-O. Oh, wait, that's not how that's
B-I-N-G-O.